Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you here. We're also pleased to have back on the program Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is with us once a month, always on a Monday, to talk about home maintenance. He knows a lot about single-family home and all of its parts. So if you have some kind of problem or question, we can deal with it. I know he'd at least do his best. We can talk about things like heating and cooling, insulation, roofing, siding, windows, doors, attics, basements. You get the idea. All you have to do is call us, and we already are getting some callers lined up. So let me give you the number, and then we'll get right to it. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line. That means that if it would be a long-distance call for you, we'll pay for the call. 800-222-9455. We have callers ready to go. Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here once again. Let's get to it, and we'll start with someone in St. Joe. This is line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Hank, when is it too late in the year to install shingles?
Well, we'd like to get them on when the temperatures are above 45 or 50. And, yes, I know it's getting that. We can do it this week, I guess, according to Ed's forecast. But it's not going to be very long. Otherwise, you're going to have to have a caulking gun up there and squirt a little roofing cement on each one because the sun won't activate the adhesive that's on the shingle as well.
Okay. Got a question on, are you familiar with rainflow gutter protection material?
I have information on at least 12 different gutter protection systems. they vary in effectiveness. They vary tremendously in cost. It all depends on what kind of things you're trying to keep out of there. If you have needles, like pine needles, spruce needles, whatever, it takes a little bit different system than one that keeps leaves out.
Yeah, it's leaves.
Yeah.
And I've looked at the Rainflow product. It really looks pretty good. And I know you're recommending the Rainflow protection with the plastic or aluminum cover, but this is sort of a fiber material with a cover on top of that.
I have a couple of samples of it. I've not had any experience with it installed to know just how well it works.
Okay. And can you recommend any contractors that have a good performance record of determining the proper dimension of gutters and size and number of downspouts?
There are some of those, but generally speaking, we don't give out contractor names. Call me at the office, and I'll see what I can do for you.
Oh, okay, good. One last question. We have insulation in our, between the floor joists in the attic, and it's an old house, so those joists are about 15 to 18 inches deep. And is that adequate, or do I need to consider
if you fill it? Yes, certainly it is.
Pardon me?
If you fill it with insulation, yes. I would suspect they're no more than 12 inches. Even 12 inches of insulation is pretty good.
Okay. So I don't need to be concerned about applying insulation on the underside of the roof?
No.
Oh, great.
The attic should be ventilated.
Yeah, it is.
Uh-huh. And so, we don't want insulation on the underside of the roof.
Super. Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks for the call. Next is someone in Champaign. This is line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I have the cedar siding, and three sides, I think, are with the solid stain, but I think on one side it was painted just with regular acrylic paint. Can you paint over, just use regular acrylic paint and paint over cedar? I mean, not cedar, but the stain?
Do you know whether it was an oil-based stain or a water-based stain?
Now, my understanding is that you can, I've got some of it, chips of it and all that kind of stuff. I guess with acrylic, you can actually bend. Is that true? Where oil, if it's oil, it sort of chips or breaks. Is that correct or not?
Well, somewhat. I won't go quite that far out on the limb as being a general rule, but yes.
Well, and, is there such a place that you could have it tested?
Probably not. If you use a good primer, you should be able to paint over acrylic. Certainly you can paint over oil. You should not put oil over an acrylic, but you can put an acrylic over oil.
Now, will it last better or equal to or not? Or is stain better?
Generally speaking, stain is better from the standpoint that it does not form a film. Therefore, it won't crack and peel.
Okay. And then the final question, have you ever used this, I guess Pittsburgh Paint calls it Timeless, and the, Lowe's, it's the American Traditions, and it's called Duramax. It's called something like ACT, Advanced?
Well, I think this is the one of the ones that goes on in it as an extra heavy coat.
Well, yeah, true, and it fills in cracks and stuff.
But yeah. Yeah.
My joke is, it says it lasts a lifetime. Well, if you're older, you know, a lifetime is...
it's kind of relative.
I've always wondered whether that meant the lifetime of the guy selling it, the guy buying it, or the company that made it.
Yeah. Right. But, you know, it's a good deal for if you're 20, I guess. But if you're, in the entire...
First, you have to make the assumption that the company that made it is still going to be around at the end of this lifetime.
Yeah, I understand. I think this one is... Oh, that's right. They call it advanced cross-linking technology. But have you ever had any experience with that or anyone that you know?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I know about it. I've seen the literature. But it hasn't been on the market long enough to have any real performance information.
Mm-hmm. But so you can now, would you have to... In other words, let's say you're just going to paint over it. In other words, some kind of stain remover. Would you have to use that first or not?
As long as it's reasonably well cleaned, wash it perhaps, so that we get all the surface dirt off of it. That'll make it stick a little better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So, just as a general question, maybe you can't give a general answer to this, but if you do good surface, you're doing exterior house painting, you do
yes.
good surface preparation and you do a good job of applying the paint, how long would you expect that paint job to last?
8 plus, something like that.
Okay.
Depending upon the paint, depending on the exposure. Mm-hmm. In other words, it won't last as well on the south side as it does on the north side because we have more ultraviolet degrading it. Depends on how well it dries. If you have something that's covered with vines or shaded all the time, it probably won't last as long.
Hmm.
Simply because you grow molds and mildews on it.
And you're also there's a general rule about painting. We've talked about this before about you don't want the temperatures to drop below a certain point.
Below 40.
Below 40, okay,
yeah.
Because then that what happens is you don't get, your paint doesn't make good contact with the surface.
Well, and it doesn't dry the way it's supposed to either.
Okay. Now, there are, we've also talked about this, there are special paints that are made for painting in cold conditions.
Yes, I don't think you can buy any of them locally. But,
oh, okay. So if you live in Alaska, that's the kind
Alaska,
of paint
they have. One, yes.
Okay. But otherwise, you just got to do your painting when it's warm.
Right.
All right. And one more time now. About oil and acrylic. Which way is that you can go and which way?
You can put acrylic over oil, but don't put oil over acrylic.
All right. Because it won't bond right to the surface?
It's more likely to peel because the acrylic is not a vapor barrier and oil is. So if you have a non-vapor barrier behind one that is, you're likely to be able to push it off.
Okay. All right. Hank Spies is here from the Spies Home Inspection Service with us once a month. On a Monday, we do home maintenance issues, and we have some other people here ready to go. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next is Urbana, and it's line 3. Hello.
Hello, Hank. What's your business phone number?
356-5048.
Okay. Now, my question is, I'm wondering about my 5608, did you say?
356-5048.
5048.
Right.
It's in the book.
Okay. Now, my question is about my water heater. I noticed that my water heater, and I'm sure this speaks for many other homes, vents directly into the chimney, and it goes directly out. Is there any way I can harvest that water, I mean, that heat? Because, you know, that was all right when fuel was cheap, but now that it's expensive, I'm wondering if I could run some type of diversion into a grill that would pump that heat into my basement as opposed to just letting it go straight out the chimney.
Well, they do make a set of fins that clamp around the pipe.
Oh, yeah?
If you've got a reasonably efficient water heater, you're not losing all that much. But, yes, you can put fins on the flue pipe and get some of it back.
Fins, then you don't cut the pipe or anything like
no.
that? Would I get that in any hardware store, or where would I?
I would imagine I would think that the big box stores would probably carry it.
Okay, and what would I ask for? Just some type of, like, some grill or fins or what?
I would imagine so. I don't know. I've never tried to buy the stuff.
Oh, uh-huh.
Most water heater pipes are relatively short.
Yeah.
And, again, your water heater isn't using that much, and if you recover the heat, generally speaking, the utility room with the water heater in it isn't what needs heat.
Uh-huh. Well, mine's in the basement, and I've noticed just by feeling the pipe that there's a lot of wasted heat going out, and it gets worse in the winter time because, you know, it kicks on more often, so I would like to harvest that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I say, a set of fins that go on the outside of the pipe
uh-huh.
is probably the best way.
Oh, okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. I think, too, that you wouldn't actually not, the flue gases, we don't want them going directly into your house.
Absolutely not.
So that there would be a good reason to, you don't want to, yeah, maybe you might get a little heat that way, but also you're going to get stuff that you don't want in the house. You want to get that out. So that's why we vent water heaters in the first place.
Right, and as I say, you can get some heat exchanger effect with some fins on the thing, but that's about as far as I'd go on it.
All right. Next is Urbana, and this is line one. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
I'm from Urbana, and I have about a 100-year-old house. I think, I don't know when the kitchen flooring got put down, but it's been cracking. It's very old, and I started pulling it up yesterday, and I found that the tiles, I don't know the material exactly they're made of. There's some kind of linoleum flooring or something.
Probably an asphalt tile.
Ah, and it's about 3 millimeters thick. Mm-hmm. But underneath that, I found a black kind of cardboard papery fiber.
Yes.
And underneath that, a kind of tar. And I have wood flooring that's at the base. I don't know how to pull up this tar, and I'm wondering what you could advise to remove it. It's all over the place, and I'd like to pull it up and then maybe put a ceramic tile down.
Probably the easiest way to go and do it is to put an underlayment over it. If you're trying to pick up tar, you are in for a major project. The black paper that was under there was originally designed as a vapor barrier that went in the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nothing but asphalt roofing felt. And that's where your tar came from, was it soaked out of that paper.
Mm. Okay.
But probably if you want to put ceramic tile or something or other, you're going to need to lay down an underlayment specifically designed for ceramic tile. Usually they're cement-based and smooth and hard and so on. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I would waste my time trying to get the tar up.
There was also the possibility of sanding down and getting to the wood and covering the wood with a kind of finish. You wouldn't recommend that?
I think it's going to be very difficult to pick that up sanding.
Uh-huh.
You're going to clog an awful lot of sandpaper with that goop.
So that's not really an option for me.
I don't think I would do it in my house, but if you had infinite patience, perhaps.
And the infinite patience would involve doing what?
Well, you'd have to use a solvent on it and try and scrape it up and then sand it and so on.
Uh-huh. And what kind of solvent?
Basically paint thinner.
Paint thinner. Okay. Thank you so much.
Right,
you have to realize that if you have infinite patience, you will be rewarded sometime.
I like that. That's very good.
Thank you
All
so
right.
much.
Thank you for the call.
Okay. Bye-bye.
If you have infinite patience, you'll be rewarded sometime. I'm writing that down. Let's see. Who talk to next? Someone in Urbana, and this is line number two. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. My son and daughter-in-law just purchased a house, and it has hot water heat. Mm-hmm. The problem is it's the original boiler that's there from when the house was built, mm-hmm. and they're trying to decide whether they should install something more energy efficient. And
how old's the house?
Built in the 50s.
I threw mine away.
Mm-hmm. Can you recommend a good brand to replace with? I mean, I only know about gas furnaces.
Mm-hmm. There are a number of varieties. There are a couple of high efficiency ones. I have a Canadian one that was made in Canada.
Uh-huh.
And that's been pretty satisfactory to me. But I think there's someone in the U.S. bought their patents now. And so there are some available. We need something that's in the 90% range, okay. Your AFUE efficiency in the 90% range.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you. Next, White Heath. This is line number three. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. We have a cement plant patio, and it doesn't get a lot of sun. So we have a lot of problems with the algae or whatever that tends to grow on there. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that we can put on regularly that would keep this from developing over the summer?
Probably if you wash it down and let it dry with a solution of household chlorine bleach, about one part of bleach to three or four parts of water, and that will kill it off. And if you don't wash it off, you let it dry, there should be enough residue to help control it. I won't say it will give you 100% control. But
So use household bleach and just and water, and then do that regularly, like how often, maybe once a month or something?
Something like that. It all depends if it starts growing back while you hit it again, but
that
it may last longer than that.
Oh, that takes care of it then, huh?
Right.
We've tried all kinds of awful things, and I'm sure it's, you know, caustic, mm-hmm. muriatic acid and all that kind of stuff. That's so we'll try this.
That dissolves the cement.
Yeah. Yeah,
but, I would just hit it with basically household bleach.
Okay, all right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And we'll go back here to someone in Urbana. This is line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I am in the process of staining wood doors by default, and I've put the stain on the doors, and they seem to be working. It seems to be going according to directions. Right now I'm staining the trim, and it doesn't pick up. It seems to be beating up. The stain is beating up and not being taken by the wood. What do you suggest?
Well, I would figure that you have a finish on there, either varnish or urethane, that's keeping the stain from soaking in.
Ah, yeah, that's. I would think that too. I was under the impression I bought, plain unfinished varnish. Well, what can I do?
I'd hit it with a 3M pad and see if you can get the surface off. Then see if it will. What species of wood did you get?
Oh, I don't know. It says hardwood. It didn't really have a species label on it.
Okay. Well, it is more difficult to stain hardwood than it is pine.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, because the pine is much more porous.
I would think. Right.
And
yeah, so this just says made in Chile. That's it. And I bought it from a local big box,
mm-hmm.
thinking I had, unfinished wood.
But well, you may have. Some of these tropical hardwoods are very non-absorbent.
Yeah.
And one of the ones that they use for decking and so on is called IPE, I-P-E.
Uh-huh.
And I know that is difficult to do. We've put in a couple of them. Not locally, where we just took our big power sander and brought it out on the job and whipped it through, and that helped.
Okay, and what did you say, the 3M? What did you say about using a 3M?
There's a 3M company makes an abrasive pad.
I see.
fiber pad, and you can get them to fit sanders and so on, and that will they come and see. I think the gentlest one is probably a white one, then there's a green one, and then there's a red one. Roughness of them, the rough.
Okay, I will try that. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for the call. We're almost at our midpoint here. Hank Spies is with us. He's here once a month on a Monday. We talk about home maintenance, and if you have questions, the kind of things that we have been discussing here, I know he will do his best to help you out. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Just a quick question about staining. Even when you're staining something that's pine, so that's going to be very absorbent. It's just really going to drink up the stain. I think that sometimes my experience, maybe other people's experience, is it's sometimes difficult to get the stain to a nice even sort of.
Yeah, you have to put it on and wipe it off.
Well, but even then, it seems like the different parts in the wood are going to take the stain differently.
That's certainly going to be the case.
So there's really nothing you can do about that.
There's nothing about that. That's how you get the variation.
Okay, so nothing in terms of anything you can do particularly to the surface to get a nice, more even sort of absorption.
No. Not really.
Not really.
As I say, a lot depends on whether you're using an acrylic stain or whether you're using an oil stain. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, oil-based stains penetrate a little bit better. And I don't know which our last caller is using, but she might have a little bit better luck if it was an oil-based rather than. Of course, then you get into the volatile organic compounds. You got to keep the place well ventilated while you're using it.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, let's go on here to next caller, and I believe this would be Champagne and line number 2. Hello.
How are you doing, Hank?
Fine.
Listen, I have a big question about a project I want to do this winter. Crawl space has a little bit of mold on it, and I'm going to want to insulate underneath there. To solve the moisture problem, I already purchased a new sump pump basin with a cover on it.
Is the dirt surface completely covered with plastic?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And so I wanted to know if I'm on the right track here. I'll put a bleach solution together, spray the bleach, let it dry maybe a couple days, and then go through it with a shop vac with a HEPA filter.
Well, you probably don't really need to do that even. If you just hit it with the bleach, should take care of the problem.
Oh, wow. Okay, so just do that, and then I could insulate right underneath?
Now, where are you going to put the insulation?
It's a crawl space underneath, between the crawl space and the floor.
Okay, generally speaking, we don't insulate the floors in crawl spaces. We insulate the perimeter. In other words, we insulate the foundation down to at least 2, preferably 3 feet below ground, and all the way up to the bottom of the floor. That way, I presume you may have heat ducts or heating pipes or whatever in the crawl space.
Yeah.
So this means we keep that heat in and keep the floor warm.
Okay, that makes it a lot easier. So on the foundation, I have a block foundation.
Yes.
Should I try applying any kind of sealant to that before I do the...
It depends on how much moisture you have coming through it. If you have appropriate grading and downspouts, you shouldn't have a moisture problem.
The moisture problem was before we moved in, and the grate or the downspouts were just going straight down, and I've corrected that the last 2 years.
Right. So you probably shouldn't need it. There's no reason why you can't do it, but certainly I would insulate the perimeter, never the floor.
Okay, and then what kind of insulation would I be getting for the block foundation?
Probably one of the foam insulations, urethane, or one of the colored polystyrenes.
Are those applied with the adhesive?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
And you have to get one that is intended for that purpose, otherwise the adhesive will dissolve the foam.
Okay. Well, that's a lot easier than I imagined. Is that the same thing where I need to do it above 40 degrees?
No. Besides, which your crawl space should always be above 40 degrees.
There you go.
The soil surface in that crawl space probably averages 50.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like a good winter project for us then, huh?
Oh, I'd say one day project.
Cool. Thanks a lot.
All right, good luck. Let's go on to Terre Haute, line number 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I have a question. I've got some stockade fencing, and about every 2 years I would refinish it with a Thompson product that was a fence wash, they called it, which you mixed with water. Mm-hmm. I'm unable to find that anymore and wonder if there's any other similar type products. I'm not really interested in brushing on a whole fence and, you know, a standard kind of water right. sealer or anything.
Well, there are several companies that make things, generally speaking, for decks rather than fences, but it's about, essentially the same product. And
okay, most of the time I thought those were either an oil base or that kind of thing that I use on my deck. This seemed like a different product. It was you actually mixed it with water and sprayed it on, and you didn't have to touch it or touch it up or anything.
Well, is this one of the deck brightener, one of the things that's called as a deck brightener, I think might do the job.
Okay.
That tends to discourage mold growth and oddball discoloration, things like this. I think a deck brightener might work well for that.
All righty. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for the call. And we'll continue. Next up is back here in Champaign-Urbana, Champaign specifically, line number 1. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm. Yes, go ahead.
I have a new house here. And I've never had a house before, and I'm wondering about the AC unit that's out in the garden. Should I cover that in the winter in any way, or just leave it out there as it is?
You can cover it, but don't cover it with plastic. Cover it with a canvas or something or other. We don't want to keep any moisture in it. We want it to be able to evaporate. The only thing the cover does, and really these units are designed to be left uncovered, But you can cover them if you want, particularly if you're located where a lot of water drains off the roof onto them, or snow comes off the roof. You can cover them with canvas, but don't cover them with plastic.
But I don't necessarily need to cover it at all.
Right.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, and we'll go again to the next caller, and that would be also someone in Champaign, line 3. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
5 or 6 years ago, I had a well-regarded local contractor re-roof my garage, and almost immediately the corners of the shingle started to turn up. And I'm wondering, can I do the trick with a caulking gun and roofing cement to cement those back down again?
Yes, I'm wondering why they turned up. Does your garage tend to be damp?
I don't think so, more than anyone's.
Okay. It may have been, what was the temperature when he put it on?
It was pushing it into the fall, but it was still nominally okay.
Yeah. Okay, well, I just, apparently the adhesive on the shingles didn't grab hold as much as anything else. And secondly, we want to be sure that the drainage is good, so if you have ice and water dripping off your car in the wintertime, that it can run out under the door.
We don't keep a car in the garage. So there's no problem with that.
Okay. You've got a garage like mine.
Another question. My house is built on a slab.
Mm-hmm.
Do I even need rain gutters?
Yes. We want to get the water at least 3 feet away from the foundation. And if you don't, I have seen the heat ducts in the slab fill with water. So,
okay,
yes.
There are no heat ducts in the slab.
There are not. How are you heating it?
Radiant overhead.
Okay. Well, probably not, as long as you've got good drainage away. I mean, otherwise, if you have water dripping off the edge of the roof, it's going to create a little ditch. And that we don't want. If you surface that and you have a slope away,
uh-huh.
Remember our standard is that there should be 6 inches of slope in the first 10 feet all the way around the house.
Okay, right.
If you have that, probably you don't need rain gutters.
Okay. Just curiosity about the dripping making a little ditch alongside the house. Is that just an aesthetic thing, or is it actually...
Well, the water, it will tend to hold water that will soak in, and we don't want the water under the slab.
Oh, under the slab. Okay, got it. All right. Thanks a lot, Hank.
Okay. All right. Very good. And let's see. We go next to, again, someone in Terre Haute. This is line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
We have had three heating contractors in to advise us about a new heating and cooling system for our big old house. And we have three very different solutions being urged upon us. So we're confused and wondered if you could help. One is to get a heat pump with a gas furnace backup. The second is a heat pump with electric resistance backup. And the third is straight gas furnace and air conditioner. Any thoughts?
Well, I would imagine the latter is going to be the cheapest of the three, significantly.
Well, it's about on a par with the electric resistance backup.
Well, I don't know. I would be tempted to go with the heat pump with the gas backup, but we don't know what's going to happen to either gas or electric rigs in the future. Heat pump is the most efficient means of heating. However, generally speaking, most heat pump systems, are we going air-to-air heat pump or a ground-to-air heat pump?
It's air-to-air.
Okay. With an air-to-air system, I definitely would go with the gas backup. But I really don't know in this climate whether heat pumps are that much more efficient than the high-efficiency direct vent gas furnaces.
I see.
If we were doing to a ground-to-air heat pump where the soil is providing the heat rather than the air, so you're going to be on the backup system as soon as your outdoor air temperature drops below freezing for practical purposes.
Well, that's an interesting thing because I understand if you have the electric resistance backup, the heat pump keeps working anyway.
Well, okay.
And it's
but there's very little heat when the outdoor air temperature is a matter of extracting the heat from the outdoor air. There's not a heck of a lot of heat in it when it's below freezing.
Right.
So the efficiency goes down drastically.
Right.
At that point. So I would tend to avoid the electric backup. But this all depends. We have no idea what is going to happen to gas supplies and gas prices.
Yes,
in the future. Of course, we don't have any idea what's going to happen to the electric prices either. From
exactly,
everything
right.
I'm seeing in the paper, where they're predicting rate increases up to 55%. Have you considered a wood pellet fire?
Well, that might be a good solution. We do have a chimney.
No, all of these systems will work, but there's usually a significant difference in installed cost. And
it turns out that in this case, there's not enough difference in the installed cost to make a decision on.
Okay. Well, in my old farmhouse that I grew up in, I have a heat pump with gas-fired backup.
Uh-huh.
And I'm quite happy with it.
Even in the cold weather?
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you for your help.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks. We just keep on going here. We'll talk next with someone in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
We have a mold problem. We have a jet swimming pool in a small room that was added on to our house. And a couple of years ago, we had one wallpapered. And it was supposed to be the kind that would hold up in humidity, like you'd put in a bathroom or something. And it was fine until this summer, and now it has mold all over it. And my husband tried a little bit of the Clorox or whatever and water, but it didn't seem to work too well. And now we notice that the mold is behind it. It's a metal wall behind it. But there's mold behind it.
The mold is probably growing on the wallpaper paste.
Yeah, I think so. So should we just try to clean it or maybe just take it down?
I would take it down, scrub it down, and then you're probably going to have to go with some type of humidity control system a dehumidifier, a fan with a humidistat controlling it, bringing in outside air. Though in the summertime, the humidity is so high, bringing in outside air doesn't help heck of a lot.
Yeah, especially this summer was so humid, and we left the pool uncovered quite a bit of the time. Ordinarily, we cover the pool, and we do have a fan out there, but.
Well, I think you just hit it there. You hadn't covered the pool.
Right, right. We did the year before, pretty much, and this year we didn't. So
yeah.
I guess if we're not going to cover the pool in the summer, we better just forget the wallpaper, huh?
I think so.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Next is Urbana here, line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I'm considering replacing a 50-year-old furnace. And I guess the choice is between an 80% efficiency furnace and a 92%.
Mm-hmm.
Inclination is to go with a higher efficiency. Would that be logical?
Well, an awful lot depends upon how much heat your house uses, how well insulated it is. If your house is 50 years old, I would go with the high efficiency unit because it undoubtedly is not insulated to anything approaching today's standards.
Well, insulation has been added. I suppose total electricity and gas is about $275 a month year-round.
I would go with the direct vent unit, the 92%.
Well, that's what I thought, probably.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for the advice.
And are you changing air conditioners as well?
Well, the air conditioner is only about 8 years old. They're putting a new, they're replacing the coils on the inside.
Okay, well, one that old is probably producing, 7 or 8 BTUs of cooling per watt of electricity. The new ones are producing 13 by law. So you can make a substantial saving in cooling costs. But a lot depends on how much cooling you use.
Well, we probably use quite a bit.
Okay.
Would it be possible to put the new coils in that would be compatible with that and then... add the other unit later?
Usually it is.
That would perhaps be the way to go for the immediate future and then even replace the air conditioner next spring.
Well, that would be a possibility, yes. But when you're putting in a new, the new coils are larger, so when you're replacing the furnace, you've got to get a furnace that's big enough to contain the new coils.
Yes. I think that was understood.
Yeah.
It was his recommendation that we replace the coils, and it made sense to me.
Right. But I would go with the 92%.
92%?
Yeah. I don't feel that energy prices are going to go down in the foreseeable future.
I think that's probably a pretty sound prediction.
I think you're probably right. Actually, even replacing the outside portion of the air conditioner probably makes sense then, too, because... of the difference in the efficiency, even though it's working fine.
Yeah, well, if you go back to the literature that you got when you put that one in and find out what its energy efficiency was, you should be somewhere in probably the 6 to 8 SEER rating. And as I say, the new ones, you're not allowed to manufacture anything with an SEER of less than 13.
That's almost exactly double the efficiency then.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense too.
Okay.
It could almost pay for itself in a few
years, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Especially if they go 50% higher on our electrical rates.
Yes. I don't know that it'll go up that much, but it's going to go up without any question.
Well, I'm sure it will go up, probably not that much. Well, thanks so much, Hank.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call. We have about 10 minutes left in this hour of Focus 580 with Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's here monthly on a Monday to take these kind of questions. So 333-9455 is the number for Champaign-Urbana listeners. And we do also have that toll-free line. That's 800-222-9455. Next is someone in Champaign, line 1. Hello.
Hi, Hank. This is Kenny. How are you doing?
Fine.
Hey, I had a question about a sump pump. I had been having problems with my pump just going a lot. And I found out, and I had water bubbling up. I found out where it was going was very close to the house. There was a reservoir thing. So I went and I dug a trench and put it way out by the back fence. And now I'm doing a lot better with the pump not going off so much. But I think I'm having trouble with standing water in the sump. It's kind of molding and stuff. And I'm wondering if I need to adjust something to get more water out that's standing in there.
Well, you might adjust your float on your sump pump so that it pumps it down a little further. Do you have what's going into the sump? Is it just the water from around the house, or are you perhaps running a washing machine or something else into it?
I believe it's only from what's around the house.
Okay, good. Then setting the float lower so it pumps down further would help.
What would be the recommended depth to maybe have standing in the sump?
Well, mostly you set it so that the pump shuts off just before it sucks air.
Okay, so whatever I can do to get a little more water out will help the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, could I clean that every once in a while with bleach or something to try to?
Yeah, throw a cup full of Clorox in it every once in a while.
Okay, that's great. Oh, I also wanted to thank you. I got recommendations from you from a roofer here not too long ago, and they did a great job, and I wanted to thank you for the recommendation.
Okay. You're very welcome.
All right, very good. Glad we could help. Let's go on here to someone in DeWitt County, and this is line number two right here. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
My question is about a furnace in a small utility room that has the direct vent. And I also, in this small utility room, have a gas water heater. And I'm wondering when this furnace with the direct vent kicks on, if it might not pull air down the flue of the gas water heater.
Well, if you don't have enough outside air makeup, yes, it can. Remember that we're supposed to have approximately 2 square inches of intake for every 1,000 BTUs. So you get, there's a definite formula, and you're supposed to be bringing in a half of it high and half of it low in the room. What you can do is use a candle or perhaps even a cigarette smoke at the vent hood of the water heater when the furnace fires and find out whether it's coming out or going in.
Okay. Yeah. I just wonder, when I close the utility room door between the, you know, the living area and the utility room, when that furnace is running, it kind of sucks the door shut a little bit. So
I would say you don't have enough makeup air available.
So what would the person put a vent into the outside somehow? Or?
Yes, you can either you can run them up to the attic, or you can go through the wall. In some cases, they put a powered vent on that will open and close the louvers when the furnace starts and shuts off.
Okay. If a person went into the attic, what size of a pipe would you put through to let air in there?
Oh, probably about a 5 or 6.
Okay. All right.
And as I say, there should be one. There's supposed to be 2 separate pipes, one high, one low, one in the top 12 inches, one in the top and the bottom 12 inches of the room.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. So if you put in one of these new high-efficiency furnaces that has this powered vent that vents the flue gases essentially out the side, and say if you had that in your basement, you're still – can you rely on the indoor air there just that's normally in the house, or do you still have to do that thing where you actually have to have a vent from outside that's going to bring in some of the air that's part of the system of burning?
Well, it all depends on how if you open the door or close the door to the utility room. There is a formula as to how big a room that it has to open into if you don't, in order to provide enough air, and that's all in the building codes.
Okay. So that's the kind of thing that the person who is doing the installation ought to.
They should know it.
Know
yes.
That.
All absolutely.
Right. Line 3, Champagne. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm putting on a new roof on a 100-year-old house. and I was wondering if we're not going to be putting it on for about 3 more weeks. Will that cause a problem with architectural shingles that have been sealing down?
Yes.
Well, quick enough answer.
Having
to wait till next spring? Or?
If it isn't leaking, I would wait till next spring.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We're down to point here. We have a couple of minutes left. If someone wants to call real quick, I'm sure we can get in one or two more calls. Is there anything in general you might say to people? We're now certainly into the heating season. I'm sure people have been using their furnaces. Anything you might want to say about anything that the homeowner can do to try to make sure that it's operating at, you know, at maximum efficiency?
Well, be sure that your filter is clean.
Okay.
If you have a warm air system, check the filters. You should replace them on the ordinary 1-inch thick filter. You need to replace it probably twice during the heating season, twice more during the cooling season, in order to make them work efficiently. One of the things that you can do is put a thermometer in the outlet closest to the furnace, and we should not be getting more than about 140 degrees out of that. If you're getting anything higher than that, the filter is blocked and you need to change it.
Okay.
So that's one of the things that you can check. And be sure that, again, using a smoke or an air source or something, or go around the front of the furnace to be sure there's nothing blowing out of it on the front, anywhere near the burners.
All right.
So this would indicate that it would be drafting properly out the flue.
Okay. We will try to get one more call at least here. Someone in Urbana. It's line one. Hello.
I think I may have asked you this question or something similar to it before. Family has an old farmhouse in Ohio that has been added on to with the original house dating to 1868. So it has a complex roof line. And it isn't always heated completely through the winter time. So there's a place where we get an ice dam, and then there's water that leaks. But the ice dam is like 8 feet back from the 8 or 9, 10 feet back from the roof line. We probably need to have. We had some Amish roof it, and I'm wondering whether we might need to have somebody else come in and put a different kind of membrane underneath. New roof shingles?
Yes. When one of the adhesive-backed solid roofings should go under the shingles under those kind of circumstances. With my work in Colorado, we put that under everything.
And what is it called?
There are several brands of it. One brand is Bitumen, another one is Peel and Seal. Basically, it's an adhesive-backed roofing materials so that if anything gets under the dams, back water under the shingles, it cannot get through the sheathing.
Okay, Peel and Seal and Vitrathene?
Vitrathene. There are probably a couple of more. Those are the two I run into more often.
V-I?
No, B is.
Oh. Can you spell it?
Bitumene.
Bitumene. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay. In situations like that where, well, I suppose if the house is not going to be heated, you wouldn't do this. But there are some places where they have these kinds of problems, and they actually have heating elements in part
yes.
of the roof. I guess maybe it's just right at the near the edge of the roof.
Well, generally speaking, you start about 2 feet inside the wall and go down to the edge.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of expensive. It's not a great solution. You're much better off when you are re-roofing to put on the adhesive-backed membranes, and so that even when the snow backs up, you won't leak.
Okay. Why not just do that as a general sort
well,
of thing?
We don't really need it in most cases here. And as I say, in Colorado, we're required to because of the high snow, the heavy snows mm-hmm. in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
We do put them in over the entire roof and then put the shingles over that.
Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of how much snow you're going to get in the season, and
right.
are you going to have a lot of snow standing on the roof for long periods of time, probably.
Right.
Yeah. Any last sort of thing? We've reminded people about make sure you change the filters on your furnace.
Yeah. Check, be sure that it's venting properly. And that pretty much does it. Remember, the most furnaces have variable speed circulating fans on them. And so it's a matter of making sure your fan is running fast enough to keep from, make it blow warm air, not hot air.
Okay. Well, we'll leave it at that for this time around, with our thanks to Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. Thank you very much for being here.
You're very welcome.
We appreciate it.